Well, whether someone has never visited Wisconsin or has lived here their whole life, chances are that the images of rolling hills dotted with family farms and a smattering of especially healthy black and white Holstein cows would be a mental picture of our state. And behind each of those farms, we have families and individuals, and they all have interesting stories to share. Ed Janis, our next guest, is working to collect those stories and to preserve them. He's an audio journalist, he's a writer, and director of the People Remember Oral History Project. And Ed, it's great to have you with us today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on, Larry.
It was wonderful to have you with us. And I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. Maybe you worry about the stories of Wisconsin farm life are disappearing. Or maybe you have an idea for Ed. I don't know if he's still looking for people to interview, but you might have an idea of someone.
You know, Larry, there are thousands of people out there that really ought to be interviewed. It's very frustrating not to be able to talk to them
all. Yeah. Well, our number for you to join in, or maybe you've got an experience of your own to share, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post your comments there. At first, maybe, you know, you're the director here of the People Remember Project.
Right.
What are the goals of that project?
Well, let me give you a little background, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Larry. When I wrote my book called Creating Dairyland, yeah, I went out interviewing today's farmers, of course, a lot of older farmers, but some younger ones as well. And it really struck me that so many of these insights, stories, personalities were disappearing, obviously, the way the world works, I think. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to get those. And I wanted to communicate those in the voices of the actual people. So in my book, it's text. But what if we had been able to listen to the old cheesemaker or whatever? So this project takes the book a step further by we're going to create an electronic book. So you'll actually be able to hear these very, very interesting people. And I just, you know, given your last guest and the idea of agricultural illiteracy, I think there is a real agricultural humanity illiteracy.
Mm.
So we don't know these people, but many of them are truly interesting in their own rights, whether they're farmers or not. And they ought to be honored by being a part of history.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with you on that. So you've talked with, you know, sort of a broad range, haven't you? And around this, everywhere in the state.
And the idea is to even broaden the range further by talking to people in all the different forms of agriculture. Mostly I've specialized in dairy.
Right.
But I'll give you an example. From the 93-year-old woman in Richland County to her former neighbor, now a cardinal in the Vatican. A Wisconsin dairy farm boy. So that's a pretty wide range of people, right? you know, to a poet, who a dairy farmer poet who writes poetry on his tractor, and just the variety of human beings out there mustn't be lost.
No. And, you know, I think Mary in Eau Claire has something along those lines, I think. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My husband, who's 75, you know, grew up on a small Wisconsin farm.
Right.
And they raised a little bit of everything.
Right.
So, one of his sisters has died. So I'm just wondering, do you have a format for recording these things, you know, just for the sake of family? Or
What's
the best way to interview people like that?
Just ask them the questions you really want to know. I do it a little bit different. I'm a historian, and so I'm interested. I'm a historian of human beings, so I'm interested in those kinds of questions. You, as a relative, would be interested. Just think of the questions you really want to ask this person. Get a good recorder and just press record. And have a conversation. Don't think of it as an interview where you ask questions and wait for answers. But have a conversation. And a lot of very interesting things that you probably didn't know will come out.
And you could start, you know, when he was a young man and and even kind of go forward.
That's right. How was, what were his chores on the farm?
Yeah,
what did he think of those chores? Did he try to escape? You know, that's a normal theme. Did he get along with his father? Because that's one of the great sort of conflicts in agricultural history in Wisconsin, every place, is the father wants to keep doing the way things are and not spend any money, and the son wants to improve things so his life is a little better. So those are often interesting inquiries.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, because sometimes it comes up with stuff I never would have known what to ask.
That's
a neighbor picked up something at a garage sale and thought it was really cool and then recoiled from it when she found out it was a hog scraper.
We mustn't recoil.
Well, and you can, these days, you can get a recorder, a decent recorder for...
Do it on your phone.
Yeah, you can do it on your phone. As well as not, and
but my phone's in the dark ages.
If you had a smartphone, you could do it on a smartphone. Otherwise, you can buy a recorder at
Radio Shack or someplace. $75-$80.
And that would be give you a very good quality sound.
So just have a conversation.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank
Mary.
You for calling.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. That's an excellent. Question. Nancy in Grafton, let's turn to you next. Hi, Nancy.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, you know what? I called last time around Christmas time, and you talked to Santa Claus, and my little girls up in Alaska were so happy that they heard from Santa Claus, and they didn't get the little horse that they wanted, but they did. But they were so happy, and my daughter called right away from Alaska and told me that she was listening. And they were, you made them so happy.
Oh, wonderful.
But anyhow, I just wanted you to know that. God bless you. I grew up on a 160-acre farm up in Marathon County in the town of Cleveland.
Yes, I know the place.
And our buildings were in the middle of 160 acres. Well, we had a long driveway. We were at the end of the section, so we were about the last ones to go and get our driveway, our road plowed out, you know. And so my dad... smart guy that he was, he took that stone boat that he cleaned out the gutters with and hauled the manure in the afternoon, but he took the stone boat, put new fresh straw in it, a horse blanket, and he hooked up the horses, and he took us to school across the snowbanks, and we got to school. I think there was about 23 kids in our whole school, three in my class, I know, maybe 26. But anyway, we got a couple of miles over to school, and was a nice ride in the stone boat, but not too many people get a ride in such a classy vehicle.
Such a classy vehicle.
Oh, yeah, it was wonderful. And then in the middle of the night, you'd all of a sudden hear a noise coming. Oh, maybe it could be a mile or more away, and you knew that those big cats were coming, and they were going to plow out your driveway finally. And the driveway was never very good. So in the middle of the springtime, it was a mud hole, and it was, you know, halfway in the middle of 160 acres, and milk truck driver couldn't get in, gosh darn, or he'd get stuck. And so my dad and I took the hay wagon, and we put the milk cans on, and we took it out to Highway H. And so anyway, we got out there. We picked up the empties. Well, we went to get the empties. Anyway, they stayed there overnight or whenever the milk and came and picked up the fresh milk. Well, we were coming home, and the horses went on run away. They went to beat the devil. My dad couldn't stop those horses, no way. And the milk cans, the empty ones, were flying all over the field. And then they kept running till we had a straw pile that was on the west side of the house. And they ran around that straw pile, and when they finally ran out of steam, they stopped. But then my dad took over, and he took those straps, and boy, those heme straps, and he gave those horses such a licking.
A little bit of a licking. Oh, my goodness. Well, Nancy sounds like she would be the kind of person.
Oh, yes.
You like talking to.
Oh, yes.
To.
I like talking to everybody, almost. Something Nancy said, though, that I thought was interesting, it's something you hear, I hear quite a bit when I talk to people on farms, especially women, is working with their father. You said, my dad and I got the hay wagon out.
Mm-hmm.
And that relationship between fathers and daughters, I think, working together in the barn, chatting, that is not something that today's young people get a chance to do. And I think it's hugely important. And you are to be, you know, I'm sure it did you a world of good.
Yeah, absolutely. Nancy, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. And we'll get some more people involved here. You can join in at 800-642-1234 as we, you know, listening to Nancy there. How do you decide who will represent, you know, who to talk with, I should say, I guess?
Yeah, well, it's a science and it's hit and miss. I have a group of people, and I know lots of people, of course. You are one I'm going to put on my list of people to recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the most interesting cranberry growers, let's say, or people in the cranberry business, or who, you know, in agribusiness, who really is a thoughtful person? But sometimes it's pure chance. I was giving a talk up in Marathon County, and a guy comes up to me, an old guy that must double as Santa Claus, and he's handed me a sheath of papers with poems, you know, many, many, many poems. He says, I write poetry on my tractor. Well, so I looked it over, and I just fell in love with this, so I went and interviewed him. So some of it is just by chance, the right people at the right time.
Yeah, and other times it's by
recommendations, sure,
from other people.
Yeah.
And again, how did you get started with it?
Well, it all started when I was in junior high school, Larry, like I bet it did for you. Somebody gave me a recorder, and I fell in love with talking to people and then listening back to what they said, you know. So I've done that all through my career, did that in college. And so I just love talking to people. I was a dairy farmer for 2 years and fell in love with the people in particular, and the work, the work itself. And so that's become my area of interest. I want to talk to people who can really tell us, I call it reading Dairyland. How can you tell what really went on that abandoned farm or that modern farm? And those are the voices that I think can tell us that, so that when we drive through Dairyland, we understand it better.
We're going to take a look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. But I want to just, by way of promotion, say that we've got a few short pieces of interviews that Ed did, and I want to certainly play some of those after we take a look at the news. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234, and we'll be back with Ed Janis right after this look at the news. Please stay with us. The agricultural life in Wisconsin is certainly a big part of our history and culture, and there are a lot of stories that really need to be gathered so that the knowledge and the experiences of those folks are not lost. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Visiting with Ed Janis, who's an audio journalist, a writer, oral historian, director of the People Remember Oral History Project. He's also author of Creating Dairyland, How Caring for Cows Saved Our Soil, Created Our Landscape, and Brought Prosperity to Our State, and Still Shapes Our Way of Life in Wisconsin. We talked to him when that book came out. Ed, great to have you back.
Thanks, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. And this project, the People Remember Project, how many folks have you interviewed about their experiences in agriculture?
Right. That's a very good question. If you take all the interviews I've been doing about agriculture, some of which I did for other projects, I've got about 150 hours of stuff. And that doesn't even scratch the surface. Now this, and you know, even interviews which aren't necessarily interesting, there's always one or two really wonderful insights that you just have to have.
Yeah.
I think you've got a recording here. You might want to play, now that I think of it, Picking Rocks. Did you see that one?
Yeah.
Let's try that one, okay? I can tell you about it.
Let's do that. See if I can get this up here. Let's do that right now.
Okay.
Probably the things you remember is the work you'd done. We had a lot of land to break. And we broke that with a one-bottom breaking plow. And to talk about progress as far as my father was thinking. He had me follow that breaking plow and throw all the loose rock out on top of the furrow. To clean up that land, we had a lot of rock, some of them half the size of this table, some of them the third size, and then a lot of smaller ones. And we removed them all. Picking rock is an institution of itself, if I might say it that way.
Did you feel like you were a slave or a prisoner in some penal colony?
You know, no, I did not. It was part of stuff that had to be done, and I accepted it as such. And strange as it may seem, when we got done picking, you just look back at how good that looks. Made you feel good about it. That's the only way I can say it. Made you feel good about it. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I was thinking when I was listening to that, I was remembering an interview with Jerry Apps. Jerry and I talked many times together, and right. One of the things that he had to do on his farm as a kid was that very thing.
Picking rocks. And what I find interesting, this is a fellow named Phil Hine, very interesting, wonderful, in fact, is he said when you turn around and you look back at what you had done, it made you feel good. And I think that's part of the secret of farming. There's so many of those little things that make you feel good about yourself and what you've accomplished.
Yeah.
That may be unique in our in life today. I don't know, but you hear this all the time.
Yeah, I'm thinking back of my own experiences of, you know, when you were baling hay or whatever. You at the end of the day, or if you were cultivating corn or whatever, you always had. Could look back and say, oh, I did all those acres or I did all that work. And it is a good feeling.
Almost every farmer I've talked to, maybe not all, but say that the idea of helping to feed the world is a huge part of their psyches. It's obviously not the only reason they farm by any means, but it's really important to them. And you have to hear them say that to get what they're getting at.
Yeah. Yeah. Marvin Ogama, thank you for calling. Hi.
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 Hello.
Yes, what's on your mind?
Well, I just calling about my father-in-law, who unfortunately has passed away by now. But some years ago, somebody from the Historical Association from Madison came and interviewed him on his farm and created 7 cassette tapes about the history of his area and a history of his farm.
Wow.
And the copies of those, I know, are in the, what would you call them, the archives
of
the Historical Society in Madison.
Yep.
And I also found out that they made those tapes into discs now.
Wow.
So I thought the people should know that they're available, and of course the farm is in what we call North Central Wisconsin, and the barn at this day is over 100 years old, and I married into the family, and it turns out that when the folks passed on, my oldest son was able to purchase the property.
Oh, that's great.
And so it's still in the family, so to speak.
Great. Wow. That's wonderful. You know, you don't know this, but I'll tell you that all of the interviews we do, or most of the interviews we do, will be archived at the State Historical Society. Some of them will be available to listen to, but all of them available to read and search.
Oh, that's wonderful.
We call that finding a place for farmers in history.
Yeah, and obviously the Wisconsin Historical Society, a big supporter of this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Marv, thank you so much. I want to give Sarah in Zion, Illinois, a chance to join in. And then I want to ask you about another Marlo Nelson. I want to ask you about Marlo Nelson,
sure.
But let's
like
hear from
you.
Sarah first. Sarah, are you
hi,
there?
Hi, am I on?
Yeah,
oh,
hi.
Yeah,
thanks
here.
For calling.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. You know, I've always wanted to ask this to someone who might know. My dad grew up in Walworth County, and he's 85 now. And he had a really unusual childhood because he was born in the city in Chicago, and then his parents divorced. And his father, my grandfather, decided that he needed to be raised on farms in Wisconsin. So he somehow contracted with various families for my dad to live on their farms for years, and in exchange for him working on the farm. I mean, this started when my dad was about like 6 or 7.
Wow.
And I know.
Wow. Let me jump in real quick. I have heard of some of this, but not quite as directly as this.
Did he have a number of other siblings?
He had one sister. You know, it was a really weird family situation because my grandfather kind of stole my dad away from his mother. And so his sister stayed with his mother in Chicago, and my dad lived on farms in Walworth County, especially Palmer Farm near Lake Geneva.
Now, was he put on a farm of non-relatives or of his relatives?
Exactly. No,
non-relatives. Yeah, my father was a city boy from Chicago, and his parents, they were pretty poor, sent him up to Wisconsin 1 year to be on a farm. That's all I know about it. He's long gone.
Huh.
Yeah, so I think it was also, of course, I hear lots of stories about kids who go to live on grandpa's farm to get out of the city. 'Cause, you know, farmers didn't believe in the morality. I mean, lots of people didn't believe in the morality of cities at that time. And they thought, and rightfully so, I think, that growing up on the farm would be a form of better moral development.
Yeah. And I think, you know, from the 30s, as you were talking about the 30s, I mean, there were people who just couldn't afford to keep their kids and either had relatives or acquaintances where they could send the kids to the farm because at least they could work on the farm. There was food there, you know, people survived on
That's
the
right.
farm.
That's right. That's a good point, yeah. Can I ask one? I have one
sure,
question.
For me, it's fine,
That same grandfather was a professional photographer, and he liked to go up to Walworth County and take a lot of photos and sell them to calendars and stuff. And I have a collection of photos of farm life and rural school life from that period. What should I do with those?
Besides letting me have them? Well, first of all, let me say I'd love to see them. I would, if I were you, and I can help you do this, maybe Larry will have our website posted or something, that so I could direct you to the people at the archives at the Historical Society. That's where they belong.
Okay.
I'd love to see them because we really like to have pictures from the past on our website.
Oh, sure. Well, it could be both. You could use them in your site, and they could wind up at the Wisconsin Historical Society.
So if you feel like you get in touch with me at thepeopleremember.org.
Yeah, we have that up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. But what is it again? It's thepeopleremember.org. Thepeopleremember.org.
Thank you.
Great.
Very interesting.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. Isn't it amazing how here's the interesting things that you've not heard of, I've never heard of, pop up just one right
Isn't
after
it,
the
yeah,
other.
Yeah, it's really like that.
It's wonderful. And you were telling me off air about Marlo Nelson, a person that you talked with.
Right. He died recently, unfortunately. He was in the late 80s, I believe. This is one of the, I think, truly remarkable but pretty much unknown stories of Wisconsin. So here's a guy, Marlo Nelson. He grew up on a Kenosha farm, his uncle's farm, a very famous breeding farm, Grayview Farm, and was an extension agent drafted into the Korean War and posted to Japan. So this would have been around 1952, mm-hmm. 5 or 6 years after the war. So I met Marlo Nelson. Somebody told me I really ought to go talk to him. So I went to his house in Viroqua, a very modest little home, and he takes me in. And on the wall of his office is this medal called the Order of the Rising Sun. He was awarded it by the Emperor of Japan. So here's this modest fellow from a Wisconsin farm who is credited in many ways with revitalizing Japanese dairy farming. He notes that in Japan after the war, the kids were short and their teeth were bad and they walked, their bones weren't very good. And so he eventually placed over 100 or 150 Japanese young men on Wisconsin dairy farms and helped the Japanese breed better cattle. And for this, the emperor thanked him. I just think, who would know driving by this house?
And that's a very high award in Japanese culture.
Oh, I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's absolutely wonderful. We have, we've got some more interviews that we can, pieces of interviews that we can listen to. Yeah. You know, we talked about 4-H earlier, and you have a great piece, I think, about showing cattle. We talked about, a lot about
this
showing
cattle. This is
wonderful, Let's listen to that.
I always wanted to be able to show cattle. As a matter of fact, I used to tie strings around my tricycle, and baler twine, and pull it through the yard pretending it was my calf that I was showing at the fair. You know, I'd tie it up to the tree, my tricycle, with the baler twine, you know, just kind of pretending that I was showing at the fair. So I started showing cattle as soon as I can, and I think that was like 8 or 9 was my first time.
Do you think part of showing cattle was sort of training yourself as well?
Oh, absolutely. Training yourself to be patient, to be understanding, to be aware, to be controlled, self-control. It was an incredible lesson. And some of my fondest memories are, well, maybe not fondest memories, but good memories are, you know, the meltdowns you'd have in the show ring when she decided that this was the day she just didn't want to be in that show ring. And I still remember one day hanging on for dear life as that junior yearling or senior yearling was running out the ring because she didn't want to be in that ring anymore. And there was my dad right at the end of that show ring, just reached out and grabbed her, held onto her while I regained my composure because I'd been dragged across the ring and I was embarrassed and I was crying and I didn't want to do it. And Dad said, yeah, you do. You can take her back out there. Now you do it.
Oh, that's a great...
This was a 4-H story, as a matter of fact.
Right.
Telling about a friend. I call it the catcher in the rye, caught by her father. Now, this woman is an amazing woman. She was Alice in Dairyland in 1982.
Oh.
Yeah, and Dorothy Farrell. She's now a big executive at one of the big cheese companies in the state. And that's another area that we're looking at. I've done a lot of Alice in Dairyland interviews. Most impressive.
I actually know Dorothy Farrell very well. So she's an old friend of mine, actually. Went to school. She took a class from me at one time.
Really?
As a matter of fact.
Wow.
So that was, I didn't know that ahead of time here. So
oh, that's cool. Yeah.
It's great to hear that story. Which I don't remember her ever telling me about. So it must be fun. Any special tricks to teasing those stories out of people? Or do they, once they get rolling, do they just...
Yeah, well, it's not a, I wouldn't call it a special trick, Larry. I would say if you actually are interested in what people have to tell you, they'll just tell you.
Yeah.
And it's not easy, believe me, but sometimes. But that's what you need to do. Just listen.
One character that you interview is Loretta McGlynn, who's better known as Dimp.
Yeah.
Let's listen to that.
Listen to Dimp, yeah.
Yeah.
93 years
My
old.
My name is Loretta McGlynn, but they call me Dimp. 92 years old, and I was born on a farm in the town of Ithaca. I got married, then we moved up here on top of the hill where my son lives. I don't like the city at all. I always said, I don't want to live in the city at all. My sister, she's dead now, but she lived in Richland Center. And I said, I used to go down there and visit her. And I thought, how in the world can she stand living in town? One time my husband and I took a trip to Canada. And we got up there and everybody talked French. We decided to come back home. Mother and Dad were two of the most beautiful people that ever lived. I had one sister and three brothers. We all grew up on the farm. And a lot of times it was pretty hard because it was during the Depression. But for some reason or other, we made a go of it. My dad was a fabulous farmer, somebody that loves the land. He was positively a fantastic musician, too. He probably could have made his living in the music world, but he chose to be a farmer.
chose to be a farmer.
Exactly, yeah. This is a woman that you wish you could bottle and freeze and have on store for the rest of your life. She's really wonderful.
Well, and I want to do one more here.
Sure.
Because we have her sharing a story of making beer on the farm when she was a child. So let's listen to that one.
My dad used to make his own beer, and I got to tell you a good one. He made wine and beer. When they'd been working out in the field, my mother would send this little pail of beer out to them, and I was the taker. Well, I heard somebody saying about you could get arrested for having beer. It wasn't very big. I was only probably about 5 or 6 years old. She sent me out the field with a pail of beer. And when I got halfway out between the barn and the house, a car drove in, and I didn't know who it was. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to get arrested. So I set the pail down, and I sat on top of the pail and spread my dress out, and I sat there. I don't know how long before the car finally left. When the car left, I got up, took the pail of beer out the field. But I'll always remember sitting on that pail of beer.
So, I mean, what could be wrong with a story like that?
Well, I mean, you know what? What it encourages me to do is to listen to more of these because they're...
I'd love it. There's some really good ones.
And typically, how long do these are these interviews? Emily?
Yeah, well, so I usually interview people for an hour and 15 minutes, an hour and a half. That's quite a long interview. And then I try to get them down to 1.5, 2 minute, 2.5 minute stories. And then I place them in context with some text and photographs. So they're generally 1.5 minutes, 2 minutes. So like a Dimp here, I must have 8 stories of her, from her.
Yeah.
You know, short stories from her.
Oh, what a character. My goodness me.
Well, you haven't heard anything yet, Larry. You listen to her.
Well, now, are these interviews available? When will they be available?
Oh, I wish I knew. Frankly, we're trying to raise money now to make them available.
Okay.
So that's our next phase of the project. I'm still going out and doing interviews, but mostly I'm going out and trying to get some money so that we can transcribe these and give them to the Historical Society and produce our magazine. So I can't answer that.
Yeah. And you said produce a magazine?
Yeah, we're going to do this e-magazine. I've been looking into this. So again, it's pictures, it's text, and it's actually the voices like we've just heard. And people can subscribe to it or get it through our sponsors. And maybe every 3 months or so we'll put out. And then everything goes up on our website and Facebook page.
Do you find that some people are much more ready to talk than others? I had somebody like Dimp, for example, probably didn't take much to get her wound up.
No. Certainly some people are more Dimp-like than others. There's no question about that. But people really do want to talk. I mean, if they've agreed to have me come to their kitchen tables, they're ready to talk. I like to make sure they understand what we're interested in ahead of time so they can prepare and that sort of thing. And I always say I get all sorts of questions written. You're probably the same way. And then when I get there, I throw the questions away and we just have a conversation.
Yeah, that is often the case. And I can recall from my own experiences over the years where I've been involved in research projects where I might have been interviewing farmers or farm families.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people would, you know, oh, gosh, that's going to take a little bit of time. But then once they sit, you know, once they sit down and start talking,
mm-hmm.
You might be there a long, long time and have a great time.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Oh, you clearly will have a great time. I always worry that the interview's too long and I'll never be able to edit it.
Yeah, that would be...
That's hard.
I tell you what, I've got to give you a lot of praise because taking an hour and a half and interview and cutting it down to 1 or 2 minute and a half pieces...
It's brutal.
it's got to be brutal. And so, Ed, again, where do people go...
Well, go to our website if they want, thepeopleremember.org, and we've got maybe a dozen or more of these little things like we just heard, and more information about the project and why we're doing it and who's involved.
Oh, well, it's a fun project and very worthwhile project.
Thank you so much.
Ed Janis, audio journalist and director of the People Remember Oral History Project. And we've got a link up on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and we'll link you right to it. And it was great talking with him. Probably have him back and we'll do it again as this project develops. And great to have you listening in as well. I know we got some great programming coming up tomorrow, and I hope you'll stay with us right now, though, because there's lots more in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.